How good and how pleasant it is for brothers to dwell together in unity. Anybody been involved in disunity? One of your brothers just rolled his eyes. He's felt the pain of disunity. Could we write our own psalm? Behold, how bad and painful it is for brothers to live apart in disunity. It's pretty awful, actually. Disunity is an awful thing. But unity, that's a beautiful thing. That's a beautiful thing. Look at Psalm 133, if you're not already there. Look at Psalm 133. I'm sure you know or have heard that in the days and in the region of the Bible, most of the Bible writings, oil would be an ointment, a dressing or a balm you would put on your body, and particularly in your hair and on your head. It might serve to allow you to smooth your hair down, to let it be combed lay flat. Without many baths or showers in the hot and dry and an arid country, you wouldn't have had if you had a cistern, and every family would need a cistern, that was for drinking water or for animal water or for cleaning water. It wasn't for bathing except maybe a cupful or two every once in a while. You rarely got the kind of clean that we participate in. Some of us, on a daily basis, we take our involved showers. So in this environment, getting some clean, sweet-smelling oil, because you might smell a little ripe after a few weeks or months of that kind of living, years. A clean oil, the dust of the area, you might wash off your face, smooth the dust off your head, and then a sweet, clean oil, an oil that had flowers or some other fragrance soaking in it, so that the beauty of that fragrance was now embedded in the oil itself. And if you had some to put on your head, how nice and smooth your hair might be, how smooth your skin might feel, no longer dry. But if you had enough that it actually dripped down your face, oh, that's a luxury. And brothers, it would drip off your beard. I mean, I understand. Thinking the thought of oil dripping down my face is not a comfortable thought. But I don't live in the Middle East 2,000 years ago, okay? I haven't gone weeks and weeks and weeks without any real cleansing. This is a different environment. And I probably smell really ripe. And to smell something else that doesn't smell like me or my animals probably is a wonderful experience. And so to imagine to have enough of this ointment that it would flow down your face and drip off your beard, enough that it would drip down your robe, not only down your robe, coming down upon the edge of his robe. Ah, man, that's luxury. In other words, this experience is an experience of head and of face and of body. Ah, this is good. This is good stuff. What's he talking about? What is so refreshing and so sweet-smelling that a rough a farmer or a shepherd would be excited and a shopkeeper would ignore for a while the responsibility and the tug of his own store, that he would relish in this luxury? What is it that's so pleasant? Ah, it's unity. It's a unity among brothers. Today, every direction around us, there's a call for pluralism. There's a call for tolerance. There's a call for acceptance. And it's really a beautiful and a sweet call. It sounds wonderful. Some of us grew up in the days in which the United Nations was being founded and formed, as an example. And so many of the symbols, especially over the decades of past, have been of the United Nations, have been this wonderful thought of community of nations, of a unity, a joining together. And as a boy growing up back on the East Coast, I got to visit the UN building one time in New York City. And the symbol you would give to a child about the United Nations is a ring of children, hand in hand, all the way around. This beautiful ring of children, all smiling, all happy, with Asian clothing on, with European clothing on, with South American clothing on, with African clothing on, all faces smiling, all bright and cheerful, all connected and joyful. And the call is great. It is so beautiful to imagine, and we yearn for this kind of peace. We yearn for this kind of unity. But the United Nations hasn't been all that successful sometimes, has it? We don't have a great diverse unity around the world sometimes. The sloppiness of unity is that there's a right perspective on unity, and then there's a wrong way in unity. You see, the beauty of unity is the diversity of people uniting together for a cause, in a direction, for something that's important. And even if that something is just each other, because frankly, there's nothing more important on this earth than a human being. But it gets all sloppy because it gets slopped over into a unity or a pluralism or an acceptance of all sorts of ideas, of all sorts of religious perspectives, of all sorts of norms. And so now we've gotten to this place where acceptance and unity means accept everybody's ideas, accept everybody's position, accept everybody's religion, accept everybody's own personal truth, or some other aspect like that. Unity is a powerful thing. Unity is a beautiful thing, but it works in the framework in which God gave it. Let's look at unity today and give it some energy. Let's give it some drive or some fire. Let's give it some encouragement so that it can't be just to talk about, all right, everybody, we need to get along. And you need to find somebody. Let's take it more from the way the Bible presents it to us. Why should we care about unity? Didn't Christ die for me? Didn't he die for you, right? You believe that, right? Christ, the Son of the living God, came to this earth, died on a cross, was resurrected from the dead. And our faith and our obedience in him, our baptism into him, brings us in contact with his blood. We share in his death. We share in his resurrection. And we walk new lives. How exciting is that? So I'm cleansed, right? My sins were as scarlet and they're as white as snow. We have more snow out there. I love snow. I'm getting tired of it. Anybody else getting tired of the snow? A little bit much. Okay. Lord, thank you. Thank you. Oh, I'm getting picky. Yeah, I know. We have a record to beat. Only a few more inches. Oh, yeah. I was there back in the winter of 2012. That was a rough one. Please be careful on the roads. I don't want to make light of bad weather. Okay, so I've got this beautiful place in Christ, cleansed of my sins. That's it, right? I can just walk happily on my way, watch my P's and Q's, be nice. No, he says, you're part of a body. What? Not only that, Robert, I've got a new commandment for you. What's that, Lord? I want you to love one another, like my wife and kids, no, beyond that. Like my friends, no, beyond that. Like my acquaintances, no, beyond that. No, beyond that. However I want to define that limit, Jesus says, no, beyond that. You see, it's not just us coming to Christ. Last week we talked about the beauty and the logic of our faith, of how the scriptures and the faith in God and understanding His Word is sensible and logical. But that's not enough. If you present somebody something sensible and logical, they'll say, oh, wow, that's sensible and logical. See ya. And they go on to something else. It's much more than that. It's more than just making sense. It's viscerally connecting. Look at Ephesians 4. Why is unity so important? Ephesians 4, the whole chapter is on unity. But let's try to dig into it just a little bit, just for a couple of minutes. Ephesians 4, this beautiful thing, this oil dripping off of our beards and our robes. Ladies, you don't have beards, you can drip down your necks and get into your robes. Therefore, I, a prisoner of the Lord, implore you, walk in a manner worthy of the calling. Robert, it's not just your salvation. I've got other people's salvation in mind. Worthy of the calling with which you have been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, showing, watch this word, New American Standard uses the word tolerance for one another. In love, being diligent to preserve the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. There is one body and one Spirit, just as you were called in one hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is over all and through all and in all. Back in John 17, Jesus in his prayer for us said, and by the way, Rick Collins is doing a class. He and Judd are teaching the Wednesday night class. I encourage you to come to that. And Rick's side of it is teaching on unity. I cleared this lesson with him, by the way, so that I wouldn't be taking any of his material, because he's going to go into a different area of unity. But the unity we have, notice this tolerance, this unity among each other. It is not a unity of not a divergence of ideas. We are not a prism, or the gospel is not a prism in which light flows in one side, white light, and it branches out into a rainbow of colors, all these different pathways, all of these different ideas coming from one God. That's not his perspective at all. He says there's only one body of his Son, not many. There's only one Spirit of his, not many spirits. There's only one hope. That's an interesting only. There's only one hope. Acts 4 teaches us that there is no other name under heaven given among men by which we must be saved. Jesus and the name of Jesus and being found in Jesus is our only hope. There's only one Lord, not many lords. There's only one faith, not many faiths. There's only one baptism, not many baptisms. Not many effective baptisms, anyway. Baptism simply means being immersed, and anybody taking a bath or going swimming this week has been immersed. But there's only one baptism that is effective in bringing us into contact with the blood of Jesus Christ. There's only one God. Not many gods. There's only one Father, not many fathers. You see, truth, there is such a thing as truth. And truth is by definition exclusive. Philosophers and scientists and others today will try to tell you it's not. Can't know truth. Truth is elusive. Truth isn't something specific. Your truth is different than my. All this sort of, no. Truth is true. As soon as you define something that in fact is, truth is a definition of what is. And as soon as you establish your awareness or your knowledge of something that is, everything else, all other possibilities are ruled out. I've been taking a sip of water and here, and there's so many grams or ounces or however you want to measure in weight or in liquid this water. And yes, it's evaporating slowly, and yes, you can measure it before and after it evaporates. You can measure it while it's evaporating. But the fact is there's a certain amount of water in there, and at any instant, that is truth. There are not gallons of water in there. There are not eye drops of water in there. There's a few ounces of water, and that's the truth. As soon as you establish truth, by definition, it is exclusive, and you're getting rid of everything else. As soon as you are saying there is one Lord, you are saying there are no other lords except this one. As soon as you are saying there is one hope, there are no other hopes except this one hope. You're not being judgmental in establishing that. Truth is by definition exclusive and unique. You are who you are. You are not somebody else. And as soon as you establish your name and your identity, the possibility of you being anybody else is excluded. You are you. Your DNA is yours, unique. So the why of truth, of unity, the why of unity is because we, who are many, become one. Bible say that somewhere? Oh, matter of fact, it does. 1 Corinthians 12 teaches us specifically, even as the body is one, yet has many members, and all the members of the body, though there are many, are one body. 1 Corinthians 12:12. We don't have time to read the rest of 1 Corinthians 12, but the entire aspect is on the beauty of bringing a diverse group of people, a diverse collection of people into one. It is not only beautiful, it is not only exciting, it is not only helpful, it is godly. Jesus said, as we are one, you and I, Father, I want them to be one with each other and with you. That's my words, I'm paraphrasing Jesus. You see, the collection of many individuals into one unity is godly. And it's proper, and it's necessary. Jesus boiled it all down to two commands, right? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor. And love your neighbor as yourself. This unity thing is necessary. Down in verse 11, he says, I gave you apostles and prophets and evangelists and pastors and teaching. They're all for the building up of the body until, verse 13, we all attain the unity of the faith. The unity here isn't based on feelings, but it is based on passion. Passion isn't necessarily feelings. Passion is like a drive, like a desire, like I'm going to get this done. The sports team on the field with only X number of yards to go, and the guys in the huddle, those big, tough football players, hold hands. They hold hands in the huddle. Because they have soft feelings for one another. Ah, they're united. Man, we're one. They'd lock arms, except it'd take too much time to untangle all the equipment to get out of there and get back to the game. This morning, we prayed back here in the back room, and we held hands praying together. Because you can only pray holding hands? No, because it's a demonstration. It's a statement of our unity. We are one. God says, the same way I'm one, I want you to be one. The same way there's only one baptism, I want you to be one. The same way there's only one faith, I want you to be one. Because there's only one body. Don't make my body a divergent thing. Father, I'm sorry. We already have. I know, he says. You can't do anything about those, but you can do something about yours. You can do something about the body you're part of to make sure that your body is united. It's not feelings, but it is a passion. It is a determination. I am determined that based on who I am and what I do, I will not participate in a divisive action, a divisive teaching, a divisive thought. I'm going to teach the word of God, the truth of God, but I am going to love the people around me. I'm going to serve the people around me. If you have that determination, blow the embers of that fire. Encourage that along. Unity does not encompass diverse beliefs, but it does encompass diverse people. The why of unity? Because God laid us out as a diverse group of people to be in one body so we'd know Him better and we'd be able to connect to other people better. We'd be able to connect to other people better. It's a very sad thing when we create a homogeneous congregation. A congregation, I mean the most obvious ones, the congregations that are either all white or all black or all Hispanic or all whatever. That's the easiest because those are visible divisions. But the same thing is true if you're only a wealthy, you know, self-made congregation, or you're only a, you know, an old good old boy congregation, or you're only a whatever kind of congregation. As soon as you're trying to be homogeneous, as soon as that's the basis of your unity, you're wrong. You're wrong. Acts chapter 13 has kind of a cool little description. Acts chapter 13, verse 1. Now there was at Antioch in the church that was there prophets and teachers. This is the list of their prophets and teachers. There's Barnabas. There's Simeon, who is called Niger. There's Lucius of Cyrene. And Manaen, who'd been brought up with Herod the Tetrarch, and Saul. You got a hot-headed Jewish Pharisee in Saul. You've got an aristocratic man. Today might say he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. Manaen grew up with Herod in a palace. You've got Barnabas, Mr. Smiling Encouragement. I mean, his name means son of encouragement, right? You've got Simeon, who's called Niger, probably because he's from the Niger region. He's probably from sub-Saharan Africa, which would most certainly mean he was dark-skinned. And then you've got Lucius, the Greek, from Cyrene, not associated with any of their cultures or societies. Those six guys are six completely different kinds of people from that region. And those are the ones who were ministering to the Lord and fasting and praying together. When they had fasted and prayed and laid their hands on them, they sent them away, down in verse 3. They sent Saul and Barnabas away. That's unity in diversity. That's what we're supposed to look like. That's what we're supposed to sound like. That's what we're supposed to feel like. That's what we're supposed to act like. So why? Because it shows the oneness of God and it spreads His love to whoever walks in the door, whoever is your neighbor, or whoever you work with. Why? Because it reflects God Himself, and He is a united God in His three parts. Even in our marriages and our homes, He says, out of two you become one. Who? We got the why. The who is everybody. All the diversity of people. And the more diverse, the better, it seems to say out of Acts 13. What? Let's talk about the what for a second. Colossians 3, so as those who've been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of, this is your list, compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, patience, bearing with one another. forgiving each other. Whoever has a complaint against anyone, just as the Lord forgave you, so also should you. Beyond all these, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity. And let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts. Indeed, you were called in one body. That's the what of our unity. That we are particular. I'm compassionate to my friends and kind to people I like and humble when CB has made appropriate fun of me. Or maybe he gets me irritated enough that my pride and arrogance come out. No, we're not going to go down that road. Never mind. I'll be gentle with children that don't irritate me. Child irritates me. I stop being gentle. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Gentle. Patience. I get impatient with my impatience. Here's the what, Robert. Compassionate, kind, humble, gentle, patient, bearing with one another, forgiving each other, just as the Lord forgave you. Oh, Father, help me in this stuff. Help me, help me, help me, help me. You know, God tells us, I love God. I study God. I love who He is. He's so awesome. How about just you and me, God? And God tells me, no. If you don't love your brother whom you do see, you cannot love me who you do not see. Ah, God, you make it tough. Unity, unity, unity. That we bear with each other, that we pull close together with each other, that we are compassionate and kind and pay attention to each other. There are some in here today, I think, are visiting with us for the first time. Don't assume somebody else is going to talk to them. There are people in here who are visiting for the umpteenth time. Don't assume somebody else is going to greet them and look them in the eye and say, how are you doing? I don't think I remember your name. And I'm sorry about that. My name is, I'd like to get to know you better. Don't let today go by if that division has been formed between you and somebody else and there's a friction there. There's a reason. There's a powerful reason that God says, if you have something against somebody else, or if somebody else has something against you, the only thing I want you to do is go talk to them. Just the two of you. Just the two of you. You can mouth off to me or somebody else. You know how awful that person is? They were... You can mouth off to a lot of people, and they'll go, oh my, that's so sad. They shouldn't have acted like that. You try doing that to somebody's face. You try saying that eye to eye with the person you're talking about. That becomes a whole lot different. Can we talk? Because that what happened before really hurt my feelings. It did? Yeah. Can I tell you about it? Sure. Oh, I didn't mean that at all. See, it becomes totally different when you're looking at somebody in the face. If after that point you don't have a good resolution, then you bring one good, loving Christian friend with you. Hopefully is it just as good a friend of theirs, or maybe a better friend of theirs than they are of yours, who can help you mediate. But you don't leave it alone. How? Well, we're already a little bit into the how, but let's look at Romans 16. Romans 16, verse 3. Greet Prissa and Aquila. Verse 5. Greet the church in their house. Greet Epaphroditus. Verse 6. Greet Mary. Verse 7. Greet Andronicus. I'm not going to go through all of them. greet, verse 8, greet, verse 9, greet, verse 10, greet, and greet, and verse 11, greet, greet, verse 12, greet, verse 13, greet Rufus, verse 14, greet, verse 15, greet, verse 16, I'll skip 16. You know, the number one another verse, we did this last year, right? The number one another verse in the New Testament is love one another, right? The number two one another verse, the second most popular one another verse, you know it already. The question is, how many of them are there? Greet one another with a holy kiss. There are five of those in the New Testament. So this morning, I want to see a lot of kissing going on in here. But what does it mean? It doesn't mean we can ignore it because, well, we don't kiss in this society and it was a societal thing. Hey, how you doing? Yeah, good to see you. That's not what it means. That is not what it means. It may mean we don't have to go up to each other and kiss each other because kisses are romantic and other things in our society and we need to be careful. But it doesn't mean you give somebody a nod across the room and shuffle on out. What does kissing mean? Well, first of all, kissing means you're close to somebody. Right, Bones? I've never kissed Mr. Kenny. Probably not going to start today. He said, save your lips, is what he said to me. But it does mean, if I'm going to apply this in our relationship, it means I need to go over there and get close to him and sit down with him. A kiss is also affectionate. It means that I care about him. A kiss is close. It is affectionate. It is personal. You need to care about people around you. You need to be personal with people around you. It's all part of the hospitality thing we've been stirring up over the past few months. So we've talked about the why. We've talked about the what. We've talked about the who. We can talk about the where, but it's sort of everywhere. Let's just say when. When. Right now. Today. Be involved in being a force of unity in this congregation or any congregation you go to. But I don't know anybody. Exactly. But I just got there. Exactly. But there are so many cliques around me. Exactly. Thank you very much. If you feel like there's a lot of cliques around you, well, I need you even more. We need people who, look at that. That looks like a clique. Hi, everybody. How you doing? That's not my personality, Robert. Okay, I understand. It doesn't change the who, what, why, where, and when. Still, go pull somebody close and say, hi, my name is. And if there's even a millimeter of suspicion that you're involved in a clique or something that might look like, sound like, feel like, taste like, smell like a clique, pull back and say to everybody in the clique, say, hey, we're starting to look like a clique. Let's all do an about face and go talk to somebody else. I'll see you Tuesday. We'll have breakfast together. I'll see you next Saturday. We'll have coffee. But right now, I'm going to go talk to somebody else. Unity is beautiful, powerful. It ought to cover our heads, be a joy running down our face, and drip down to the ends of our robes. It's a beautiful thing to participate in, and it's an ugly, horrible thing when it's not there. Today, Christ gives us a point of unity, a why of unity, a perspective of unity, a what of unity, a where, a how, and a when of unity. If you want to be united first with Christ and then with his body, this morning is a great time to be baptized into him. If you're ready with that action or have any other need that you want to let this body know about, please come forward while we sing the song that's been selected. Thank you.